Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
It's a devastating blow, but if you're ranked as the number one offensive line in the National Football League, which Pro Football Focus had the Philadelphia Eagles at entering this season, one would surmise that you should be able to overcome it. That doesn't mean it's not a devastating loss. It doesn't mean that it's something that can't compromise your success to some degree. Because if you're Jalen Hurts, if you are Saquon Barkley, obviously that offensive line had an enormous amount to do with the success you enjoyed. We know how valuable he is to the Philadelphia Eagles, so you got to hope that ultimately he's going to be okay. But in the same breath, even with him, even with Becton gone to the Chargers, it's one of those situations where if as a unit you're considered number one, it's a hole you should be able to plug to some degree is all I'm saying.
Stephen A. Smith, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy is off today. Nate Geary is in. We are 2 weeks away from the start of the season. Eagles and Cowboys, 14 days from today. On the Western Hotline, Lou DiBiase from Locked On Eagles. It's 14 teams in 14 days, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Get a Northtown Engine Shield engine protection warranty on new and used vehicles. Going through all the Bills' opponents, Philadelphia, Week 17. You know, we've talked to you, Lou, a couple times about this game, and as we've talked about, it's possible that neither team's even playing for a lot. But maybe divisions are still on the line by then.
Yeah, or at least like a bye week. I mean, there's only one spot in each conference now to get a bye. So I think the starters will be playing, but I do think the NFL messed this up. I don't know why this game wasn't earlier. I mean, it's two of your top three teams in the NFL.
Yeah. So what's the biggest story at Eagles camp? There was the injury to Dickerson on the offensive line, and that ended up being better than maybe people feared at first. What does a Super Bowl champion team talk about at training camp? Because it feels like it's hard for just anything to be like, oh, this guy's injured or this guy doesn't look good. Yeah, but we won the Super Bowl, so whatever.
Yeah. I feel like it's very zoomed in. Like right now, I think there's a lot of worry about that third cornerback spot. So I know first world problems for a roster that's pretty complete, but I think people are concerned, you know, behind Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, Darius Slay did go to Pittsburgh. Isaiah Rodgers left in free agency as well to Minnesota. I think people were high on Kiwi Ringo, another Georgia player who was a 4.3 speed, high upside corner. And he just, it's very similar to when Rasul Douglas was in Philadelphia. It feels like the front office really likes the player, but the coach doesn't. It doesn't feel like he fits the scheme. And so surprisingly, Adoree Jackson's been beating him out. And I think people are a little bit concerned about that second outside cornerback spot because they do want to keep Cooper DeJean in the slot. But yeah, I mean, overall for a team that I think, again, it's still the most complete in the NFL. I think it's kind of first-world problems what Eagles fans are a little bit worried about right now, but I think people are definitely looking at those starters that, you know, on the defensive side of the ball left in free agency, if these younger players can step up and, you know, kind of continue that floor.
How about on their defensive line? They lose a couple guys, Milton Williams, Josh Sweat. That group so far, like, will they be as terrorizing, you think, this year as – I mean, last year felt like everyone knew it. Like, you didn't need to know their PFF grades or their pass rush win rate to know that, like, that's one of the best defensive lines in football, if not the best.
Yeah, I do feel like the floor is a little bit lower because they are naturally younger now and more inexperienced on the defensive line. You know, Milton Williams and Josh Sweat leave. In comes Jalix Hunt, a second-year edge rusher that's still definitely raw. I mean, he had a great playoffs, but not sure if he'll be able to carry the load as a top two player. I think they thought he'd be a bigger part of the rotation in year two than in his rookie season. But now suddenly, yeah, I mean, Brandon Graham retiring as well. Jalix Hunt's that go-to guy opposite Nolan Smith. And then it's Moro Ijoma at defensive tackle replacing Milton Williams. Both players, again, a very high ceiling, but the floor is definitely lower. But I will say, just to add context, like, of course, the last thing we saw of Josh Sweat and Milton Williams, it was them wrecking the Super Bowl. It was them both terrorizing Patrick Mahomes. Like, Josh Sweat almost won Super Bowl MVP. But during the regular season, like, they were good, not great players. Like, I don't think there's going to be, you know, that hard of a ceiling to reach to replace those two. Like, I do think Ijoma and Hunt can, you know, get to what those guys were at in the regular season. And then for, like, Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith, like, they're going to only be better this year. Jordan Davis as well. So I like who they brought in for agency. I think they'll be fine. But, yeah, I do think the ceiling is higher, but the floor is definitely a little bit lower.
Jalen Carter, who, Nate, this is true. Lou has a t-shirt of Jalen Carter. Remember the image of Carter hitting Mahomes in the face with his hand, like almost stiff-arming him? Lou's just got that image on a t-shirt, right, Lou? Mahomes getting hit in the face?
I mean, yeah, it's one of the most iconic moments in Eagles history. I mean, it's great. I love it.
Yeah. On the offense, this is what they are, right? Like, they're going to run the ball with Barkley, and the passing volume will be down a little bit, I would think, right? Like, they didn't really need to be throwing the ball as much as some teams last year. So, like, A.J. Brown sees a little bit of a decline in, like, his target volume, I should say, more so. But, again, like, Barkley's Barkley. So, does their offense look basically the same as it did last year?
Yeah, I mean, that's their identity, and they're still going to be the best running team in football this year with Saquon, that elite offensive line, and Jalen Hurts. But I do think there's, like, a middle ground between what they did last year and suddenly becoming, like, one of the more pass-heavy teams in the NFL. I just don't think Saquon Barkley can hold up if you give him that kind of usage rate again. I think when you look at the history of the NFL, like DeMarco Murray after 2014, Adrian Peterson after 2012, Sean Alexander after 2005, like running backs that got that many touches normally the next year do not replicate that production because most of the time they end up getting injured. So for the Eagles, like, yeah, Saquon should still be the face of this offense, but he needs to be the face of the offense when it matters most at the end of the year in the playoffs. And so for him to hold up again, I think they need to not only use their other running backs, like A.J. Dillon and Will Shipley had good summers, but I think you do need to rely on Jalen Hurts in the passing game more, and I think you will be able to do that more this year. Like, I think what you saw from Jalen down the stretch in the NFC title in the Super Bowl, I think it's a sign of things to come. And I think in 2022, in the first half of 2023, Jalen showed, like, you know, he can be more than what he was this past season as a game manager quarterback, basically. So I think there's a middle ground between who they were last year and I guess who they were that first Super Bowl run. They're going to have to pass it more, I think, just naturally to keep Saquon upright.
Did you see the Aaron Glenn comment yesterday about the Eagles?
It's not a passing league.
Yeah. So, like, I wonder about that as a build to emulate. Like, the Eagles have done it. But here's the Jets coach yesterday. The back and forth was, like, a reporter said, well, like, this is a passing league, when asking his question, and Glenn cut him off and said, who said it was a passing league? The reporter goes, this isn't a passing league, and Glenn says, the team that won the Super Bowl, what were they in passing? 29th. What were they in running? Yeah. First. But then, as everyone pointed out, like, EPA per dropback, Philadelphia's fifth. Like, all the passing efficiency stats, they're at the top, so I almost feel like, yeah, if you hear another team bring that up, a coach bring that up, I don't think you really understood what the Eagles were, and I think you might just be using that as an excuse to say that your own quarterback isn't that great.
Yeah, when you watch the Super Bowl, I mean, the Chiefs took out Saquon Barkley. Jalen Hurts had to throw to win that championship. So, I mean, I still think the NFL is a passing league, but when you do look at the numbers, like, teams are playing cover two at, like, an all-time high, or at least compared to the last, like, you know, decade and a half. So I think teams naturally will have to commit more to the run to get teams to, you know, switch things up on the defensive side of the football, because everybody is trying to stop the deep ball. So, you know, most defenses are running these, you know, two high shells. So he kind of has a point. I think you, not just the Eagles, but, like, the Bills. I mean, the Bills kind of ran their way. Not that Josh Allen wasn't the MVP, but, like, they really committed to the run game as well throughout the majority of the regular season. James Cook had a career year. So I think, you know, you look at the teams in the Final Four this year of the NFL playoffs, like, yeah, a lot of them were committed to running the football. Or the Chiefs, like, I mean, it wasn't running, but they throw behind the line of scrimmage more than any team in the NFL. So I think, like, that is how you get the defense to come down more. But no, I don't think this will suddenly, the league's going to go to, you know, 1990s football where everybody's running it more than passing. But I think there is, again, kind of a middle ground you got to come to, because defenses definitely have adjusted.
Let me ask you this. Do you think, Lou, that this year they try to scale back a little bit with Barkley, considering what a workhorse he was last year? And does a little bit of that have to do with, I mean, I've been a Will Shipley guy. I mean, I got him in some deep dynasty
this
leagues.
This is a question disguised, and Nate has Will Shipley
say,
in
a dynasty
league.
Yeah, I have him in like three leagues in my taxi squad. I've just been waiting to unleash my Will Shipley. Is this year, is he going to get some run, some burn, or what?
No, I actually really like what I've seen from Will Shipley in the summer. Like the first two preseason games, he's looked a lot better than last year. I think he's going to catch a lot of passes. I think they want to emphasize throwing to the running back more. Jalen, I think, is going to get the ball out a lot faster this year. Kind of learned that in the second half of 2024. So I like Shipley. I actually think that, you know, from a touch perspective, he's the guy to own over A.J. Dillon behind Saquon Barkley in that backfield. But both have looked good this summer. Yeah, I think, again, like, as I was saying, they're going to have to pass more to keep Saquon healthy, but they should also rely more on the running backs they have. I think this is a much more talented backfield behind Saquon than they've had. Like last year, it was all Kenneth Gainwell, and I wasn't always the biggest Gainwell guy. I definitely think Shipley's an upgrade, and he's going to return the ball as well. So I don't know if your league gets return yardage points, but he'll be a go-to there as well in the kickoff return game. So, yeah, I'm drinking the Shipley Kool-Aid as well. He catches the ball so naturally. I think he can be like your very poor man's version of what they used to have with Sproles.
Let me ask you this, too. The trade, the swap for John Mechie, is that a Jahan Dotson, like he's on watch for maybe not being the third receiver, or is it just strictly back of the roster, you know, kind of filling depth stuff?
No, I think it's more of a depth move. Dotson's had a really good summer. I'm very high on Dotson. Like, he made a couple big plays in that Super Bowl, and he's had a strong summer. So I think it was more when you look behind that top three, they had Johnny Wilson, an undrafted rookie, Darius Cooper, had a strong camp, and then, like, Anaya Smith. So they were, like, one injury away from really being in trouble at wide receiver. And we all know Dallas Goedert just does not stay healthy every.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Every single year, and they're pretty thin at tight end behind him too. So like they just needed more pass catchers, more complete players. Like Johnny Wilson's a 6'6" towering guy that has like a niche role, but if like AJ Brown or Devontae Smith got hurt long term, Johnny Wilson's not a player you want on the field every single play. Yeah. Maybe in the red zone and in like short yardage situations, but Mechie's a more complete route runner, a more complete player than who they had. So I think, you know, and Dotson isn't a rookie final season of his contract, so they did not pick up his fifth-year option. I think it has less to do with Dotson this year, but yeah, for the future and for depth, I think that was more of the focus getting Mechie.
Week one, Eagles and Cowboys 2 weeks away, -6.5 for Philadelphia. Is that enough? Think that number should be higher?
That seems fair. Week one's always weird, especially that first preseason game, but first regular season game. But, I mean, I do feel like the Super Bowl champion normally wins that game. I mean, it's very rare. The Lions were, like, the first team in a while that got that win against Kansas City. But, you know, majority of the time, the champion does win. So, I feel like that's fair. I don't even know if Parsons is going to play in this game, though, for Dallas.
Right.
So I don't love that defense. I think the Eagles will be able to put up points. -6.5. I think that's fair, though, because, again, week one, especially the opener, is so weird. So, yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, looking back, looks like maybe only two of the last 10 years, the non-Super Bowl winner won that game, and it happened in back-to-back years.
The Broncos, right? They beat the Ravens?
Oh, that's further back. But, well, that's in there. They beat the Panthers.
Right.
The Bills. They beat the Rams. Smoked them.
Oh, yep. That's right. Yeah,
smoked them in the opener in L.A., and then you mentioned that Lions game. Yeah, I don't think Parsons plays. By the way, or he could play, but I don't know. The other game that has a big, like, there's not a lot of big spreads in week one. The two games that have big spreads are the NFC East games. It's Eagles -6.5 over Dallas, and then it's Washington -6.5 over the Giants. Both teams favored by the same amount, although most, I think, would usually put the Giants below Dallas. So
I kind of have them ahead of them, though. I kind of am drinking the Giants Kool-Aid a little bit.
Man.
Are you a Jackson? Are you already a Jackson Dart guy?
I'm a Dart guy. I thought he looked great in the preseason. Their pass rush is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean, I wish Dart was starting because I kind of liked what they're building a little bit in New York.
I was going to say, like, would you have them finishing third this year?
I have them finishing third. I have Dallas in last right now.
Dallas in last.
Why is it? Because, I mean, they've got such a great coaching staff.
I mean, Schottenheimer's running the team. I just think their defense is going to be terrible. They don't have a running game either. It just feels like they're such a one-dimensional. I love the Pickens trade, but, yeah, Dallas is just, like, good at one thing and one thing only. I think New York's a more complete team.
Schottenheimer was the first NFL head coach to seem genuinely surprised at his opening press conference. Like, he's like,
you guys are doing this. You're actually, this wasn't a prank.
This wasn't a joke. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, he was a real hot commodity in like 2011 after those two Sanchez years in New York. But
that's right.
Jerry Jones forgot what year it was when they're like, yeah, he's still a hot coach on the market. I mean,
he was the Jets' offensive coordinator
under Sanchez.
That Jets offense wasn't even good. That's when he was like a hot coaching candidate.
Yeah. That Jets offense wasn't even good.
They have not had a bottom season. When's the last time they finished fourth?
They bottomed out?
They finished fourth in the division 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, they finished fourth in the division. It's the only time it's happened in 20 years.
Well, that's only because Washington has been so bad. Even in the Dallas down years when, like, Dak's been out or just, like, you know.
Yeah, I would love
Quincy
to see
Carter
that.
Was their quarterback or something.
So, Lou, you're not watching the Jerry Jones Cowboys documentary on Netflix then, I presume?
No, it's too many documentaries. It's a team and a guy trying to stay relevant when a team or a player that's close to him is doing better. Like, Michael Jordan was insecure of LeBron James, so he made that documentary. Jerry Jones insecure of the Eagles, so he made that documentary.
All right, but we got to let him go now. Sorry, Nate, we're out of time. Nate yesterday dropping a bomb at like 9:54 on an MJ take. All right, well, we won't devolve into that. Lou DiBiase, Locked On Eagles. You want to check out any more in Philadelphia, be sure to get it. And thanks, Lou.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we keep rolling through the schedule. 14 teams in 14 days.
Will Shipley, baby.
Yeah, look at this guy. We got a finite amount of time to talk to you. He asked about the guy who had 82 yards last season.
Listen, if you guys are going to make me wake up at 5 a.m., I'm going to get some dynasty questions in.
That's fair. There are – I forgot about – we talked about this yesterday. There's a Chiefs documentary out right now. The Bills have Hard Knocks, but Hard Knocks is recurring. There's this Cowboys documentary – on Netflix. There's no earthly chance I'll ever watch the Kingdom one. But
no.
I might check out the Cowboys one.
I might, only for the same reason that, like, I would look directly into an eclipse. Like, the same reason that I would justify looking directly at an eclipse when you're not supposed to without the glasses.
Yeah.
Is the same reason I might watch the documentary. I might get rid of Netflix just because I don't want to accidentally come across it.
Yeah. It's just interesting to me that, like, they have – I want to, you know, about the 90s and the backstory of how he buys the team. And really, it's more for me, though, watching – if this is featured in that documentary, which I think it probably would be, them devolving it from Super Bowl champion Jimmy Johnson, Jerry Jones telling the world, like – I think this is an actual quote from the 90s. Like, I can win Super Bowls with a 500 coach. And then he did it the next year with Barry Switzer.
Yeah.
But he had all the players still. And since then, they've... I don't know, though, that he... I would say they've become a bit of a laughingstock.
Yes.
Whereas, like, the America's team, the ha, 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 like, that becomes a joke almost.
Yes.
I don't know that he sees it that way, though.
No, because he's oblivious.
Because he... What does he care about? Yeah. I don't know that he cares about the Super Bowls. I think he cares about
relevance,
and does he have all the power? There was a story last year that Jerry Jones was keeping Robert Kraft all out of the Hall of Fame, and that those two have been wrestling for, like, power in the league because Goodell is just works for the owners.
Yep.
So who's the lead owner is often the guy that has the most power, and that's been Jerry Jones, and Kraft has always been encroaching on that, and Jerry Jones is always just like, even though the other guy's the one who actually won.
Yep, a lot.
Who's the guy with all the power in the league? Who's deciding TV contracts? Who's got contracts at new stadiums with concessions and getting new stadiums built? It's this guy. But he doesn't win football games.
Yeah.
At least when they matter. So it's like it's such a weird, weird legacy.
And it's almost like it's turned into these contract situations where, like, the worst kept secret in the league is that Jerry Jones keeps waiting and then paying more.
Right.
And he views it as like almost like a tactic that is working for him when he's paying over market price for okay players.
Right.
But he's way overpaying Dak.
Yeah.
He's overpaying CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb's a great player, but
he
paid above market price for CeeDee because he waited.
But that's true. Like, he could have got him cheaper the year
before. He waited for Justin Jefferson to sign first.
Bill Barnwell did a good breakdown on this a couple weeks ago that if you take all the big Cowboys contracts and you pay those guys
a year early,
a year earlier when most teams would, they would have saved, I think the number he came to was like $106 million.
Nice.
That they could have saved themselves had they held it back a little bit. 803-0550 is the phone number to the Bills. We'll talk with Sal coming up at 8 o'clock. No Gabe Davis signing as of yet, I don't think.
Was he here yesterday? Did he go to one of the chicken wing joints? Did anyone see him?
I didn't see tweets about that, but you know, that's the thing you do here. When we come back, there Warren Sharp was tweeting about an old Bills game that I want to bring up to lead to a question about the one seed and this year, because I think the one seed this season is more about it's more on the table this season than it ever has been. It has been every year, but this year I feel like it's the only thing.
It's important.
The division feels like it's gonna happen, and the playoffs is gonna happen, and everything seems set up for them. Get to the one seed a little bit when we come back.
Bye week.
What's that?
I would just like to watch the wild card weekend.
Just take
at
a breath.
Home.
Take a breath and watch.
I'd like
the wild
to enjoy
card
the wild card weekend.
Yeah, I mean we did last year.
We did.
Eventually, it was 10-7 late in the third quarter. People forget that. Like that Allen to Ty Johnson pass on 4th-and-1. The Broncos would have got the ball back.
Yes, at midfield.
It was 10-7 or 14-7. But they were down one score, whatever it was. 803-0550 is the phone number here on WGR.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.